Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. 331-979-1369. Hit us with all of your texts and voicemails because it is draft week and we are so excited to hear everything that you guys have to say leading up to draft night on Thursday. So hit us up, voicemails, text messages, whatever you want to hear from us, hit us up at 331-979-1369. You can do that on social media as well. Matt, how you doing? Great weekend this weekend. And also, are you ready to apologize on Friday's show when somebody trades down from the top five?
What I said was that it wasn't going to be the Bulls trading up. That's what I said. That's why I'm not even backtracking. I told Bulls fans to shut up about trading up because it wasn't going to happen. If somebody actually does trade down, because people are talking about Memphis doing that and packaging Chandler Parsons as part of that and trying to get rid of his back count, if that happens, cool. But I'm guaranteeing you it's not going to be the Bulls. And that's what I said from the start. And yeah, thanks for asking. I did have a nice weekend. I went to a wedding yesterday. So Sunday weddings are fun, but they always make Mondays a little difficult.
Yeah, I can understand
I've been
that.
Moving slowly today.
All right, so on today's show, we're going to get to some of this draft talk, a little bit of the rumors that happened over the weekend, just kind of update you guys on a few prospects and what's maybe going to go on in the top five or even the top 10. Update you on some of those things there. Second segment, we want to get to Paul Zipser and some candid comments he had about the Chicago Bulls in his season this year and last, and maybe how he's going to probably be out with the Bulls this season coming up. So we'll talk about a little bit about that, and same with the chemistry in the Bulls locker room, because he had some interesting stuff to say that I think is more a Paul Zipser problem than the Bulls or their locker room problem. But we'll get to that in the second segment. And then to finish out the show, we want to talk about Kawhi Leonard and just where he might go and the trades that developed over this weekend, or the rumors at least that came up this weekend. So let's start with the NBA draft. Matt, are you having any second guesses about who you think the Bulls should take at number 7? Anybody that's sliding up or down on your board in your mind? Are you talking yourself into anybody else besides maybe somebody that you were more confident about over the last 2 weeks?
I mean, no, I think I've at this point become pretty entrenched in how I feel about it. I am hoping the Bulls shy away from Michael Porter Jr. I've talked on the show before, lots last week, about how I feel about his back. And you actually did some research yourself, and sounds like you agree with me now on Michael Porter Jr. and the fact that the back injury and the other examples that you went digging for are not exactly a good sign for the future of his career. I'm starting to lean towards what Casey Johnson has said, which is, I think if you're looking for a guy who at least has the highest floor and maybe not the highest ceiling, Wendell Carter Jr. paired with Markkanen in the Bulls front court makes a lot of sense to me, and it kind of makes the Bulls front court just planted, boom, done. All right, this is the front court we're going to build around, regardless of what Chris Dunn turns out to be, regardless of what Zach LaVine turns out to be. I still am tempted by the idea of, say, Bamba slides down to seven and Bamba's there, and then, say, Bamba and Wendell Carter are both there. Do you take the higher risk and higher ceiling of Bamba or the higher floor of Carter Jr.? To me, that's the only thing that if the Bulls find that find themselves in that situation on draft night, I'm saying to myself, ooh, man, that's a tough call.
I'm just glad I don't have to make that decision, right? Like, we can sit here and yammer on about who we want to see there, but ultimately, you're right. If Wendell Carter Jr. and Mo Bamba are there at number seven and you've got to decide between the two guys, that's an awfully tough decision. You're right about Michael Porter Jr. too. I think after going through some of the research and just getting myself familiar with actually what his injury is, and that was a microdiscectomy to the L3 and L4. Look, I'm not a doctor either, so I have no idea what that means. But just the track record of professional athletes and guys that have had microdiscectomies in the past, you look at Tiger Woods, you look at Tony Romo, you look at Mike Dunleavy, who was on the Bulls here, you look at Dwight Howard, Amari Stoudemire, you could go on and on about guys that have had these injuries before, and some are more late in their careers than others. We've never seen this actually happen from a prospect at 19 years old, and the more I talked myself into that and thinking about the not even the possibility of him just busting out completely, but say he does become a star or a budding star, and then all of a sudden you have this thought in the back of your mind is like, okay, he had this injury to his back, and it seems like more times than not it's a reoccurring problem. If he becomes the star that the Bulls are looking for, and then all of a sudden something happens and he hurts his back and he's not the same player, do you feel like you could go through that same thing that we went with Derrick Rose back in 2008 through the playoffs? I can't go through that again.
I mean, that's a good point, Jordan. That's a very scary comparison to make, but I feel like just now in 2018, Derrick Rose first tore his ACL in playoff game one in 2012, the spring of 2012. And it's fast forward 6 years and change, and I feel like we are just now as a fan base starting to heal from the psychological wounds that the tumbling down of Derrick Rose's career did to this fan base and this organization, because they signed the kid to a no-brainer max contract and then he tears his ACL and he's never the same. And so in this hypothetical that you're saying, maybe Michael Porter Jr. isn't a bust right away, and maybe he actually does have a couple of great years where he looks like he's going to be one of the next big stars in the league, a la Derrick Rose, and then the back injury chirps back in.
I can't deal
with
that.
And becomes a problem. I mean, are you kidding me? to put this fan base through something like that again? I'm with you, man. I couldn't do that. I mean, the Derrick Rose stuff, I'm over it now. I still look back on it with a mixture of sadness and joy, and I'm over it now. But man, going through that at the time was just, for someone who bleeds Bulls red, I couldn't do it. It was unbearable to watch that happen to that kid. And now maybe we would have to go through something similar. And I know some people out there might be saying, like, guys, come on. Like, you're talking about something as if it's happening or going to happen and it's predestined and predetermined, and it's not. You're right. But the risk is there.
Yeah, if you don't learn from history, you're bound to repeat it in some way. And I think...
Yeah, you want to think Gar Forman and John Paxson want to go through something like that again? Because the answer is absolutely not.
That's so true. So I think I'm talking myself more into the fact that Michael Porter Jr. is probably not going to be there at number seven. All the rumors that we've been hearing about the Kings still using that as a strong possibility at two. Like, look, that could be a complete ploy by the Kings to whatever gamesmanship, see if they can maybe move down from number two. But that's going to take an awful lot from another team to try and move up, like you've said before. And with the Grizzlies trying to attach Chandler Parsons to that number four pick, I feel like that would be more enticing than maybe what the Kings are asking for at number two. Discredit Michael Porter Jr. either, and we didn't get to see hardly at all of what his game is in college, and there are exceptions to this rule. Look at the amount of talk there was about Kyrie Irving before coming out of Duke, because he didn't even play really a game for Duke there, and look at what he's turned into. But he's had reoccurring problems with that knee that he had surgery on back at Duke. You look at OG Anunoby too from Indiana. He had the ACL injury back in February, and he was talked about a late lottery selection, maybe possibly even a top 10 pick, and people passed on him because they didn't want to take the risk at 22, and he fell to 22 to the Toronto Raptors, and things look to be okay there. But that's the argument here is That's an ACL injury. That's a knee injury. This is a back problem that we don't normally see from prospects and people coming into the NBA at such an early age. So that's why arguing the exception over the rule, I think, is kind of dumb in this scenario to do. But I think I feel a little bit more relief now that there's a possibility that Michael Porter Jr. won't even be there at number seven for the Bulls to tantalize themselves in talking themselves into maybe picking him at number seven.
Yeah, and with all the talk about smoke screens, this and that, and a lot of it is from organizations and front offices, but some of it also is by players who, you know, probably have certain preferences of where they want to get drafted. And all of this weirdness that we've heard from Michael Porter Jr. about his medicals, about how he's handled his draft workouts and meetings and interviews and all this stuff, definitely sounds like a guy who's not that keen on the idea of being selected second overall by the Sacramento Kings. Because, I mean, let's be honest, nobody wants to go to Sacramento. That franchise is lost. The only good thing they had going for them was Boogie Cousins, and Boogie Cousins was basically like, well, I'm going to force myself out of this situation. And the front office is an even bigger joke across the league than Chicago's front office at this point. I mean, there's a total possibility that everything Michael Porter Jr. has done and everything his father has done, talking about himself and the leak of the hip spasms and all that stuff, is that he does want to slide to seven, because obviously the relationship is there between his agency and the Bulls front office. It's a longstanding, healthy relationship. It makes a lot of sense that he's saying, all right, well, what can I do to make myself slide? And, I mean, you mentioned maybe the Kings trying to do a little bit of, you know, ploy work of their own. I would be surprised to see the Kings trade out of that spot. And they might just say, you know what, we actually are really high on Michael Porter Jr. We're going to take the risk because this franchise is starving for a star. And I'm sorry, Michael Porter Jr., but if you don't want to be here, too bad. Come in, fix your attitude, and you're on a rookie contract. So hopefully you come around to the idea of being the second overall pick and playing Sacramento.
All right, we got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Paul Zipser's candid comments about the Chicago Bulls and what happened in that locker room in the first year of the rebuild. Maybe more so a Paul Zipser problem, or maybe a problem we're not looking enough into. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds. Back here on Locked On Bulls, remember you can text and leave us all of your voicemails at 331-979-1369 if you want to jump into the conversation leading up to draft night. Whether you feel strongly about Michael Porter Jr. or negatively about him, we want to hear your interaction. Who would you guys want the Bulls to take at number seven? Leave us a voicemail and your reasons why at 331-979-1369. You can always hit us up on Twitter, too, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. All right, Matt, so this is kind of weird, and I'm glad we decided to go with a little bit of a later time slot in recording, because it seems like every time we record, there is a little bit of news, Bulls news, that we want to get to as far as breaking. And this, I don't know if this is really breaking news or anything, but Paul Zipser had an interview with a local German newspaper over the weekend and just talked about his time as with the Chicago Bulls in his first 2 years and what translated from year one to year two. And there was growing discussion that he was really irritated with the way his season went in year two, and it doesn't seem like he's coming back to the Bulls this summer, which should be no shocker really to fans, but I think it was more so the context of Paul Zipser's comments that really kind of struck me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not necessarily surprising to hear him talk in a disappointed tone about how his season went. You mentioned it certainly wasn't a glowing season. You and I talked about the season that Paul Zipser had several times throughout the weirdness of the Bulls rotation and the fact that he was basically absent from it. I think this is a Paul Zipser problem and not a Chicago Bulls problem. I think some of the comments about, you know, the rotation and his uncomfortable attitude towards the way it was handled. I mean, let's face it, the Bulls had a weird situation this season with trying to tank, essentially, and then also bringing in new pieces at the deadline. And, like, they had to throw Noah Vonleh in there, and they wanted to get minutes for all these different kids. And, right, I mean, I think it just is the bare facts, the simple facts, are that Paul Zipser does not regardless of however many Gar Forman audio drops we throw in there, projected to be a part of this team's future.
Paul Zipser, who we're high on.
And it's unfortunate that a kid who was a second-round draft pick, and we all know how many jokes are made about how little this organization values second-round draft picks, looked as a rookie to be a guy who might actually be a contributor in this league. But through an injury-riddled sophomore campaign, I don't know if anybody is convinced about that anymore.
Yeah, so just real quick, for the comments, if you want to read them in full, you can go over to my Twitter and look up Paul Zipser, and you'll be able to find his interview in full. But I took a couple things away from this. First, he says his career in 2 years in the NBA was as followed. They were very varied. The first year was just going very well. I fought my way into the team from the beginning and showed how I can help the team develop. The Bulls just needed someone like me. That's why it worked so well. We benefited from each other. That's why we were successful. And the reporter goes on to ask in the second year, and he said that was very different. It was not right from the beginning, and I was already struggling with my injury. I was not quite clear what it was. If you have pain in your foot, you automatically go down a bit with intensity. You just do not want to hurt yourself and be completely out. It was then difficult for me to keep my head in the sport. I did not manage that well. Nevertheless, the injury should not be an excuse. And he said, what else was decisive for the disappointing season here? And he goes on to say, I think we had a philosophy in the club that I simply did not like anymore. There were many rotations that would not normally happen in a team. All this change was difficult for everyone, and especially for me personally. And then finally he asked if you addressed it, and he said in the beginning it was not properly communicated to the players. Only later came the announcement that you would like to change something in the rotation, but as a player we could do nothing about it. That finally destroyed the team spirit. Even before that, you had already noticed with a few things that decisions were illogical, and if you want to make a successful season, it didn't happen here. With my coach, I was always communicated openly and honestly, and I appreciate him very much. So he's got high praise for Fred Hoiberg here, but he says that he's openly frustrated with the way the team was constructed, how this team's philosophy overall in terms of, you know, the fan base thought we were all losing to try and get a top three, top five pick. That was sort of the way the front office was talking to all season long. So it seems like Paul Zipser just didn't like the idea of going out there and trying to actively lose and cover it up with the quote unquote player development all season long. You take anything from this as well?
Well, I mean, I think the one sentence in there that really catches your eye is that finally destroyed the team spirit. When he's talking about how the players could do nothing about the weird way the rotation was handled and the fact that, in his opinion, it was not properly communicated. That's kind of a red flag. At the same time, you think about, even towards the tail end of the season in March and in the first week of April, that scrappy Bulls team, try as the front office may to tank, was out there competing and trying to win games, and unfortunately for their lottery draft odds, actually winning some of those games that they should not have been winning. So I think maybe that whole destroying the team spirit thing is a inward looking comment about Paul Zipser and the fact that he no longer felt like he was part of the team and he was lacking in the team spirit because he felt like he was not necessarily lied to, but just there was poor communication about how the rotation was handled, and that killed his team spirit. I don't think that the Bulls collectively in that locker room had a lack of team spirit, because as I said, even though they were basically trying to lose, not the guys in the locker room and the guys out on the floor, they were, I mean, it wasn't pretty. It wasn't pretty basketball every night, but you couldn't knock them for not trying. And if they're out there trying, knowing that everybody, not just in your city, but across the league, is expecting you to be losers every night, and you're still out there trying, that's not a lack of team spirit. That's a lack of Paul Zipser buying into what the team is doing.
I think I even go back to December during their winning streak. You know, when Niko Mirotić came back and they went 10 out of 12 games with a winning streak and then won 14 out of the next 21. Then the sort of shift of Niko Mirotić being out, talking about whether or not they were going to trade him, kind of dancing around the idea of, well, should we play the guys that are lighting it up and actually helping us win games? Or is the communication like, okay, we're just going to kind of throw Niko out there to see what we can get in trade value, and then once we got what we want, we're going to ship him off and pretty much just continue with this player development. Remember, the Bulls started 3-20 again, and then I think this win streak maybe had some players thinking that they could be more competitive than maybe what fans or the front office thought about them this season. And
I'm sure Denzel was thinking playoffs the whole time.
He said that even before the season started in October.
Exactly.
So you look at that. I think that's my turning point as far as him talking about how the team's spirit was killed because they were giving opportunities to guys that were coming off of injury. You look the way that they kind of cradled Zach LaVine coming back on minutes restrictions and not playing back-to-back games. That could have a factor too, is like that's telling your team there that we're more concerned about keeping Zach LaVine in one piece for the long term and the longevity of his career. And some of these other moves that they were making, sitting Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday back-to-back games, I think you can add that all up, and it would be frustrating as a player on a team that's trying to break himself into the league and only being a second-year player the way Paul Zipser was, going from a competitive team that was up in a series in the first round of the playoffs just a year ago to then getting in and out of the rotation. Then the injury factor too as well, I think, played in all this frustration, and then the disappointment in the front office as well.
Yeah, and I mean, from a positional standpoint, the Bulls really wanted to see a strong second season from Denzel Valentine, and they got that. And they wanted to see what they had in Zach LaVine when he came back in the back half of the season. And, you know, whatever your feelings were about what we saw from Zach LaVine, that's another guy who kind of got in the way of Paul Zipser getting a chance to be on the floor. It's the gross reality of the Bulls looking ahead to this draft on Thursday, saying we desperately need a wing for this roster. Paul Zipser is a reason that they feel that way, and it's that he is not that guy. And while Valentine may have proved himself to be a worthy bench player in this league, or at least on this roster for now, and that they're trying to figure out where they best see Zach LaVine fitting into this team, if he's playing two or he's playing the three. Either way, Paul Zipser does not fit into the answer of the Bulls needing a wing. Paul Zipser is the reason, or part of the reason, that that is still such a huge need on this roster right now.
You bring up a really great point in Denzel Valentine. Look, Denzel Valentine outplayed Paul Zipser in every possible way this season. I feel like you could have said maybe the tiniest bit that Paul Zipser had a little bit more on Denzel Valentine last season. He contributed more, and you could say the same thing about Cristiano Felicio. But look, Paul Zipser had every opportunity to take advantage of what the Bulls were doing in the first half of the season. Paul Zipser played in all but three games in the first 41 games of the season. He had an opportunity to show the Bulls that, yeah, you know what, I can be a legitimate rotation player, and didn't take advantage of that. I look at one of the games that he had. The best game he had all season long came against the Clippers in early February, where he scored 16 points, had 5 rebounds and 2 assists in 26 minutes. That was his season high all year long for rebounds, for points, and for assists. The second closest comes to the game on December 1st, where he had 14 points, 5 rebounds, and 1 assist in 23 minutes against the Kings. So for Paul Zipser to complain that, saying like, you know, rotations are tough, dude, you had every opportunity to succeed early on in the season. You didn't do that. And Denzel Valentine stepped up, and when Zach LaVine came back and was able to play again, Denzel Valentine took your spot because he played way better than you did. And now the injury, too, you can throw in there at the end of the season. Yeah, that's just kind of unfortunate, but that's the way this goes, and that's the way the business goes, and it's not forgiving to anybody in this league. So you got to keep that in mind as well. I think Paul Zipser's still going to be on another roster in the NBA when it's all said and done, just not here in Chicago.
And he said as much in that interview. He said, yeah, I'm pretty sure, you know, I'm not going to be in Chicago in the near future. But he also did kind of admit to the fact that it was partly his fault. You mentioned the injury, and he said it, you know, he said if you have pain in your foot, you automatically go down a bit with the level of intensity because you don't want to hurt yourself and go from playing hurt to just being out and not getting to play at all. I'm paraphrasing here. He said, because of that, it was difficult for me to keep my head in the sport. I didn't manage that well. So he kind of cops to that in this interview, saying like, yeah, it stinks that I had to kind of fight through a foot injury, but it wasn't just the foot injury. It's that I was thinking about the fact that I was kind of running on a bad foot, and I wasn't completely in the game in my head, and I wasn't giving it 100% because I was afraid that if I gave it 100%, I would hurt the foot more intensely and have to be, you know, just completely sat out. So he didn't handle it well, and he admits to
one
that.
One quick thing I just thought of. Does it bother you that now 2 years in a row, Bulls players have come out after the season and said they've sort of hit an injury? We talk about Bobby Portis having the first degree burns on the top of his foot back in March and how that affected his play, and he said it, even hiding the fact that he should have probably just taken care of it, and instead he tried to play through that fight. Same thing with Paul Zipser here. Why are players deciding to just hide these injuries from the Bulls? Is that more so the coaching staff trying to push these guys out there and say, you know what, you just got to play through the pain? Or is it coming from the players and saying, you know what, I don't want to miss an opportunity to be in this rotation or have an opportunity that might not come around again? And maybe it's a mixture of both, but it's kind of concerning to me that you got two players now in the last 2 years that have sort of covered up injuries in order because they don't want to lose spot on this team. That kind of bothers me a little bit.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I don't know the answer as far as, you know, whose fault it is and what percentages of fault get put where as far as the coaching staff, the team's medical staff, and the players themselves. All I do know is that it is certainly not a good look that this has happened to guys on the Bulls roster in back-to-back seasons. It is not a good look for an organization that seems to, and I'll try to say this without laughing, pride itself on those, what's the key phrase? Open lines of communication and trust. That's all the jargon that we heard when they gave Tibbs the boot a few years back, and they still feel like that's what they try to build their organization around, from the Reinsdorfs all the way down to the 12th guy on the bench. That's not a good look for a team that's trying to sell that as how they run.
I completely agree with you. We got to take another short break here on Locked On Bulls. We come back, we're just going to wrap up with the Kawhi Leonard news, maybe where we think he's going to go and how this might impact free agency and also trades around the league. Stay right here with us on Locked On Bulls. We'll be back in 60 seconds. To wrap up the show, Matt talked a little bit about this with Josh Lloyd, our guest on the show on Friday, and if you guys didn't get a chance to listen to that episode, Josh Lloyd is fantastic. He knows his Bulls stuff, and he knows his draft stuff as well, so go follow him over at RedRock_BBall. He hosts the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, as well as the Locked On NBA show, so go give him a follow, and go listen to that episode if you skipped over it. I know we released it a little bit later at night on Friday. You were busy this weekend. You should definitely go listen to that interview, though. He was fantastic. I did ask him a little bit about this Kawhi Leonard news, but didn't get your take on it. What do you think about all of this going on with Kawhi Leonard wanting to maybe go to the Lakers and how this might impact free agency, how this might impact trades, how this might impact the draft, and ultimately maybe how this might impact what the Bulls decide to do because of the sort of domino effect that this might have on the rest of the league?
Well, I'm sure some of our listeners are going to roll their eyes because they don't like the pragmatic way I look at things sometimes, but it's basically, my first thought was, it's the same way I feel about all of the chatter about, well, the Bulls need to trade up or this team's going to trade down. Okay, no. Until it happens, it doesn't happen. Until Kawhi is actually traded, I don't believe that the Spurs are going to trade him. I mean, people have rightly brought up the comparison of the fact that LaMarcus Aldridge wanted out right around this time last year. And LaMarcus Aldridge stayed and had a very good season with the Spurs. The Spurs, I don't know what kind of relationship fractures that exist in San Antonio right now that they have to work through with Kawhi and Pop and other people. And clearly there was some kind of loss of trust between Kawhi and his teammates who thought that maybe he was healthy enough to be playing and all sorts of miscommunication there. All I know is that the Spurs are one of the most highly efficient and well-run organizations in the league and have been from the David Robinson years through the Tim Duncan years and beyond. They're the most respected organization in the league. And maybe they don't have the glitz and glam, and I know that Kawhi is an L.A. guy from his roots and loves the idea of going back to play professional basketball in L.A., but until they trade him, I don't believe that he's gone. From the Bulls fans' perspective, I just laugh and say, okay, what? Give me a trade package that you think the Bulls would want and the Spurs would want to bring Kawhi to Chicago. I don't see it anywhere in any possible way in any universe. It's just not happening. But from the Spurs fans' perspective, I understand the panic, but I'm, you know, ain't over till the fat lady sings. Until Kawhi is doing training camp in a different team's warm-up jersey, I'm not buying that he's gone.
I'm with you on not having the conversation about Kawhi to the Bulls. We're not even going to discuss that even opportunity because that's never going to happen. So
to your point
about Kawhi Leonard and whether or not he's going to be officially out or not, I find these growing similarities, and we've talked about this before when there was the discomfort and sort of the distrust between Kawhi and the San Antonio Spurs earlier on in the season. We talked about the similarities between him and Derrick Rose and just how things formulated here in the city when he was medically cleared to play and then he decided not to play, and it was a back and forth almost every day whether or not Derrick Rose was going to play or he wasn't going to play. And I can understand the frustration from Spurs fans who feel like he was medically cleared from the San Antonio Spurs to play and he decided not to play. So I can understand the frustration from them. I find it weird, though, that he leaked all of this out to the media. And for them, for the Spurs to ultimately come into next season and still have him on his roster, I feel like at this point, that's almost impossible to do, right? How can you bring a guy back that has leaked multiple things to the media about him not wanting to be there anymore and he wants a different start and all of this stuff that's conjured up, especially with, like you had mentioned, a San Antonio Spurs organization that's run really well. I just find the comparisons very weird, and maybe it's a similarity in terms of people chirping around Kawhi Leonard and talking in his ear and bringing all these thoughts to him that maybe shouldn't necessarily be in his head. And it draws me back to Derrick Rose every time and the growing frustration that people had with him here.
Yeah, I understand the comparison between Kawhi and Rose and the being medically cleared to play and still not. Personally, I was in the boat who didn't think that Rose should come back when everybody was pressuring to come back at the end of that 2013 season, and then the Bulls got past Brooklyn and then we're up against LeBron and the Heat again, and everybody was saying, Rose got to come back and play. We're in the second round. We're playing LeBron. We need Rose. It would have been stupid to ask him to play after missing the entire season. Coming back rusty, you're going to throw him just cold and rusty into a series against LeBron, Wade, Bosch, and the Heatles? Like, are you kidding me? Get real. What good would that do? Bulls were going to lose that series with or without Rose. So, in that sense, I feel like it's not necessarily a perfect parallel, because if the Spurs have Kawhi, whether it's the 2014 team that won the finals and was the last of the Tim Duncan years, or even the Spurs team this year that had a very good resurgent LaMarcus Aldridge and a old but still reliable Pau Gasol and a emerging point guard in Dejounte Murray and all these great role players and Danny Green, and like they and Tony Parker and Manu, if they put Kawhi back into that roster, they immediately become a threat in the Western Conference. So it's kind of a different scenario, whereas I can understand Spurs fans' frustrations, because I'm thinking if Kawhi plays, you know, say he plays the last 10 or so regular season games and feels good enough to get into the playoffs and then gets them going in the playoffs, the Spurs are not a one-and-done round team. The Spurs are going perhaps all the way to the conference finals and, who knows, maybe even winning them. Because let's recall that before Kawhi went down last year, in game one, Spurs were up like 20-plus points against the Warriors in the first half. Obviously, that's one game in a best-of-seven series, but Kawhi in the fold, the Spurs are one of the best teams in the West. I don't care about the Houston Rockets. Kawhi in the fold, I'd take the Spurs over the Rockets because they've been there. They know what it takes to win. CP3 and Harden don't. So that's, I think, a little bit of the difference in comparisons when you talk about fan bases and teammates pressuring a guy to come back from an injury, especially when it's in that crunch time playoff mode of an NBA season. So how the Spurs within the locker room, his teammates and the front office and the coaching staff, how they go about trying to rebuild those bridges that were burnt and the loss of trust there from Kawhi not coming back, I don't know how that works for them. But I think it's harder because they all really believe that they could do something this season if he were with them.
I always think about, too, the misunderstood Derrick Rose here in Chicago, especially while he was playing. I think about that and compare that to what Kawhi Leonard is like, too, and I see that comparison as well. I think I'm with you there. What do you have in order for the Spurs to say, all right, we're going to deal Kawhi Leonard? What has to happen? What do you need from another team? If you're talking about the Lakers or the Clippers being interested, or from any other team that might be interested, Boston could be in play as well, 76ers maybe. What has to be on the table from one of those teams in order for you to say, all right, I'm willing to give away Kawhi Leonard, even with all of the success that they've already had and sort of the, you know what, I'm not even going to deal with that anymore, the frustration and the growing complaints between the two sides? What do you have to have from another team in order to say, all right, deal?
I mean, it's not cheap. I'll tell you that. I mean, I don't know exactly what I would demand if I were in the Spurs front office's position, and we did, in fact, say, okay, we've tried everything. the Bridges can't be rebuilt. We do have to trade him. Now, what do we get for him? He is, when healthy, arguably a top 10 player in the league. Two-way player, top three. Top two, probably. And if I'm San Antonio, I'm saying we're not even taking calls unless you shoot us a text first that says we have a pitch for you and it includes two first-round picks and two young players. I know that the injury history recently is kind of a worry, but if I'm San Antonio, that's where I start the conversation. Some combination of two first-round picks and two young players.
I'm totally with you. I agree with that. And I would even go as far as even if one young player and multiple, I'm talking like three or four future first-round picks.
Or a team that can offer them a legit star right now who still is under team control for at least a couple of years.
And I can't even think of any teams that would be willing to part with. I mean, maybe you could go to Boston and be willing to part with either Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown. I mean, you could start with that. If you go to LA and you look at Kuzma and Lonzo Ball, to me, that's not appealing as a Spurs somebody in the Spurs front office.
Absolutely not. If that's the offer from the Lakers, I'm laughing in
their
face.
And the Lakers only have the number 25th pick this year. And if the Lakers are really serious about going to get Paul George and LeBron, those picks are going to suck. Future first round picks are going to suck. So I would look, maybe steer myself away from the Lakers and maybe look to the opportunity of Boston. I think they've got way more assets to be able to land Kawhi Leonard, and you split down the middle between him. You know, you're going to a competitive team at a new start, and maybe he likes Boston out there. And I know he's wanted to go to LA, and that's been the rumor, but maybe you convince him to go to Boston and it's better for both sides. So I don't know. I think you're right, and it's going to be interesting to see where Kawhi Leonard goes and what exactly are the offers. But I'm with you. Two young players in multiple first-round picks, or I hang up the phone, or I fart in the phone and hang it up.
Yeah, exactly. And to that point, Bulls fans on Twitter over the last 48 hours or so who have said, like, well, what about, you know, the number seven and the number two and maybe Chris Dunn or maybe Lowry if you really want Kawhi that badly? I mean, to me, the Spurs don't think either of those deals are good enough. And if you're the Bulls, are you really going to sacrifice two first-round picks and the most promising of the young talent of your core that you're trying to build right now for a guy who is approaching 30 and coming off a couple injuries? I mean, I think the Bulls don't offer Lowry and the number 7 and the number 22. I don't think the Bulls would do that. And even if they did make that offer, I think the Spurs would say absolutely.
I would say, in short, hell no. Lowry marketing a part of that deal, absolutely not. To me, it just gets, in short form, it gets you back to where Jimmy Butler was at as far as where you're going to go in the East. And I think you agree too. Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Locked On NBA is going to be very busy. We have a website as well, lockedonnba.com. All of the draft talk, all the episodes from other teams in the lottery will be available there. So definitely keep tabs on the Locked On Podcast Network on the NBA side this week. Plenty of content for you. Remember, we're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.